Good morning, everyone. Hope you're enjoying this lovely day, this lovely autumn day. In case you didn't know, as Ruth mentioned, it's Good Shepherd Sunday today. And it's just wonderful to focus on some of those texts. And it sort of goes in well with Mother's Day as well today, this way. And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and foster mothers and carers and those in mothering roles. I hope you're having a good day or had a good weekend. Women and mothers and carers, they don't get the recognition, not appreciated for the wonderful job they do. Often goes unheralded. I read an article about mothers recently to say they... Well, I was thinking about myself. I do the dishes each night. But Sandra, she often has to think about all the preparation and the food and the cooking on most times. And it's talked about how women take the mental load, if you understand what I mean, having to think about all these things all the time, which is quite a big thing. So I appreciate... all the mothers that carry that mental load, thinking about things. And we just can't take that for granted. So thank you, mothers, and may God be with you and his kingdom peace be upon you as you continue to live this life daily in his praise. We are in as Peter mentioned in the prayer, we're in this time after Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection, and before Jesus' ascension, which happens at the 40-day period where Jesus appeared to the disciples. So we're in this season at the moment where we consider what the resurrection means and what Jesus' appearances and the stories around that mean for us. And my question is, does the resurrection change anything here and now? Are we to just wait? Because one day we'll be promised that we'll be resurrected. So this is a future day that we look forward to, and we just at the moment struggle and bumble through our daily lives and look forward to something in the future. That is, does Jesus' resurrection make a difference to how we live now? So that's what we consider in this season. I'm also recognise that we can't pass up on this wonderful day called Mother's Day. G'day, Sabrina and Jason. And it's just the wonderful themes to sort of dig into here, that we can think about our mothers and their nurturing care for us, but also the mothering aspects of God. God's mothering aspects are brought out in Scripture quite a bit, as much as the fathering aspects. And it's hard to pass up on God's mothering, you could say shepherding aspects to his people in Israel, to us. There's a few pictures that we can think of, like a hen. God is like a hen that covers his children. So what do I do? Do I focus on the resurrection or do I focus on Mother's Day? Well, I'd like to do a bit of both today. So I hope you can follow me. It seemed best to look at this passage today, this week, in the readings, which is from Acts 9, verse 36 to 43, which touches on these mothering themes, the tender care of mothers and the tender care of God for his people, but also on resurrection as well. And it's a story of Tabitha, or Dorcas, and she is a widow, and she is raised from the dead. So I'd like to look at this passage for these motherly themes and the resurrection themes. And as I read it, just have a listen and think about what are the motherly themes that come out of it, and also what does it say about the resurrection? I'd like to first have a reflection, as before we just have a look at the context, then the reflection on a few aspects of this passage. Then I'd like to muse about it a bit. I'll probably go into dangerous territory and make a few extrapolations. And then I'd like to bring it all together and ask the question, so what? What is this all about? and doesn't mean anything to us now. So, just a reflection, muse about it, and then so what? So, we'll go to read Acts 9. I'm going to read it from the Voice translation, or the Voice paraphrase. And listen for those motherly notes and the resurrection notes in here. Acts 9, verse 36 to 43. In a nearby coastal city, Joppa, there lived a disciple whose Aramaic name was Tabitha, or Dorcas in Greek. She was a good woman, devoted doing good and giving to the poor. Devotedly doing good and giving to the poor. While Peter was in Lydia, she fell sick and died. Her fellow disciples washed her body and laid her in an upstairs room. They had heard Peter was nearby, so two of them went with an urgent message. Please come to Joppa as soon as possible. Peter went with them and immediately entered the room where the corpse had been placed. It was quite a scene. The widows of the community were crowded in the room, weeping, showing the various items of clothing that Dorcas had made for them. Peter asked them to leave the room. Then he got on his knees, he prayed for a while, and then he turned to her body. Tabitha, get up. She opened her eyes, saw Peter, and sat up. Giving her his hand, Peter lifted her up. Then he called in the other disciples, including the widows, and reintroduced them to their beloved friend. The news of this miracle spread throughout the city, and many believed in the Lord. Peter stayed in Joppa for some time as the guest of Simon, a tanner by profession. So what do you think? What are some of the motherly themes here, or the motherly notes in this passage? And did you recognise some resurrection themes in here as well? Over to you. Shout it out to me. Anyone note anything, any words that sort of denote a motherly theme or the resurrection? Tabitha cared. Yeah. Tabitha, one of the widow we're talking about here, she cared for people. Yeah. Tabitha and the widows made clothes. Who has a mum who's ever made clothes for them? Just for those on Zoom, about more than half the people put their hands up. Yes, there's this motherly note, isn't there, of making clothes for people, which is, I'll bring up later on, my mum did for me. Any other notes, Andrea? Yeah, they really missed Tabitha when she died. So there's this aspect of this care, this person they loved and cared for them, motherly, or you could say, cared for them in a motherly way. She died and she was lost. Yeah, Randall. Yeah, don't go too far. Stay there. Stop there, Randall. I'm trying to hold the tension. You're just giving it up. But yes, yeah, this is post-resurrection. And so things have changed a bit. People are doing different things, which you might not expect. Mary. Yeah, that's a resurrection theme, this renewed life and someone being raised from the dead. Yep. Anything else someone want to say before I move on? No? Glynis? Yep. Yeah. Oh, good point. I didn't pick up on that. Yeah, they washed Tabitha's body, which, yeah, it has notes of Jesus' resurrection as well when they anointed Jesus' body. So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities. So, Tim, I'll let you in one more. Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah. Very good. There's a lot of. You guys are great. I can shut this Bible and you can do the sermon. Yeah. There's a lot of themes here. A lot of echoes, isn't there, of this resurrection and also these motherly themes. So I'll let one more person. Anyone busting to say something? No. No, Mary. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mary was talking about how in Mary and Martha and Lazarus, well, Jesus apparently got there too late, but here there's no sense of that Jesus got there too late. So similarities and differences. And John. Yep.
The washing through the blood of Christ. So the actual washing of the body is a symbol of days to come when Jesus was crucified, that we would be washed in the blood and redeemed.
Yeah, good point. John Zilm spoke about how Tabitha's body was washed and we are washed by the blood of the Lamb, by Jesus' shed blood. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that we can, a lot of directions we can go. So thank you all. Now, we don't know when this story happened. We know it happened after Jesus' death and resurrection and after the ascension. But we don't know exactly when it happened. What we do know is that it's part of the many stories of Peter in Acts. Now, you might remember that Peter was the lead disciple, and you might also remember that during Jesus' crucifixion and trial, before the cock crowed, he denied Jesus three times. Now, this is the same Peter who rejected Jesus, and yet after the resurrection, Jesus restores him three times and says, "Feed my sheep." So this is what Peter's doing now. He's now a follower of Christ who had turned 180 degrees from denier to a proclaimer, who is then went out through the region to feed the sheep of the disciples, to visit them, to be with them. He changed his spots, you could say. He was changed through Jesus' resurrection. And now he's called to a place called Joppa. Does anyone know where Joppa is in the modern day world? No. Think of the obvious. Jaffa, which is now part of Tel Aviv, the main city in Israel. So that's where we're located, on the coast. And he responds to this community of women, their community of widows, and they're living out their calling as disciples. Now, this is the only time in the Bible where the female form of the Greek word disciple is used. So apparently someone didn't tell Luke that women can't be leaders in the church. So you got Tabitha as a woman who's a widow, and widows weren't valued at large in the culture back then. No one was around to stand up for them, and so they lived on the margins of society. And Tabitha was a do-gooder. It says she was devoted to doing good works of charity. And then she died. Well, too bad. That's what happens. Don't we all die? Everything's going to end in death. This is how the world works, right? You know, Jarvis tells me, "Dad, oh, you got that voice again. I know you're being sarcastic." Well, doesn't death reign? Well, that might be the usual narrative, but the part of the story that we're in is that Jesus has been resurrected. These disciples believe that death doesn't reign as it used to. And so they call Peter to come. I don't know why they call Peter, maybe to heal her before she dies because she's sick, but then Peter gets there too late. Maybe they ask Peter to come to bury her because she's already died. I don't know. We're not given any hint here of why they call Peter to come straight away. And another note which I'll come back to is that Tabitha had two names. Her name was also Dorcas. It's the word gazelle. I think it's the animal, the gazelle. Tabitha or Dorcas. So she had a Greek name and an Aramaic name. I'll come back to that later. So, a few thoughts. Number one, a few thoughts here. What we see here when Peter arrives is this picture of a little community of women, of widows, who loved each other and cared for each other. And it's a tender little picture. When Peter arrives, he comes into this house, into this room, and they're holding up the clothes or the tunics that Tabitha has been making. And they're weeping. They're crying. They're showing all this care that Tabitha has had over the years in caring for people, making clothes for them, caring for their community. And they're holding up these evidences of life well lived that Tabitha did, lived out, and showing Peter all this. And it gives us a hint and an insight into the sort of people these women were. They were motherly. They were personal. Now, a bit about clothes. Clothing is very different to us, to what it used to be like. We can go to places now in shops where clothes are mass-produced from around the world. Different sizes, different colours, different fashions, anything you want. It's often called fast fashion. And I heard somewhere that in some circumstances, people wear clothing for maybe a year or less and discard it and then go to the shop and get something else. That's this sort of fast fashion culture that we live in. And you can buy anything you want, however you want, probably whenever you want. So clothes, when we think about clothes now, it's very different. But back then, clothing was a basic human need. And people only had, how many items of clothing do you think people had back then? Have a throw it out.
Three or four.
Three or four, maybe even less. One, possibly two items of clothing people had. And so to make somebody's clothes, it had to fit them well and you had to know their bodies, know the sort of people they were like. And so Tabitha and these widows who made clothes for other people had to be close to the people they were making the clothes for, had to know them, had to know the size of their bodies, sort of the people they were like, know the person as well. And so Tabitha and these women are not making a one-size-fits-all. They're not making multiple sizes that they're going to throw on a rack and put in a shop somewhere where people come. This is done personally and lovingly and with tender care, this job of making clothes for another person. Now, as I mentioned, some of you put your hands up later, my mum made my clothes. She knitted me jumpers when I was young. And that I'm eternally grateful for that. My mum used to have to measure me up and get all the measurements and everything, and she'd take the care in knitting something. She still knits things for my two sons. So to make clothes for someone, you have to know them. Know their bodies. Bodies are important. And so we get this sense of motherly tender care in here, and that motherly tender care isn't mass-produced, but it's for that person in particular. That person is known, it's cared for. So that's my first That's my thought. Now I'm going to muse a bit. I read verse 40 to 41. Peter put them all outside. This is once he's gone to visit the body and seen the tunics and the clothes. He put all the widows outside and then he knelt down and he prayed. He turned to the body and said, "Tabitha, get up." Then she opened her eyes and seeing Peter, she sat up. He gave her his hand and helped her up. Then calling the saints and widows, he showed her to be alive. And we're in the season of resurrection and thinking about what that means. And many of you picked up on the notes that there's resurrection themes in here. And this incident here, when Tabitha is not resurrected, but she's raised from the dead, so it's a bit different, but it's quite intimate and personal, isn't it? Peter comes in and prays over this dead, lifeless body, surrounded by the widows who are waiting outside and the friends, and you get this sense of attentive care to the body and to the person, surrounded by a caring community. And they take care of her body. As you mentioned, they wash her body. They lay her down. The body, the person, who they are is important. And when Peter raises her from the dead, Peter puts his hand out. He just simply doesn't walk out the door and, "Oh, get up now. Okay, you're all good." It's a tender care of being raised up. Now, have those thoughts in mind. My musing is that perhaps our resurrection will be like that. That our resurrection has this, in the future, has this notes of tender motherly care. That Jesus will take us by the hand, raise us up, lift us up. Is that what resurrection might feel like? It's not a mass produced, we all raised up like robots and dot, 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 dot. There's this tender motherly care in this picture of being raised up. Now, I could be totally wrong, but I just put it out to you that resurrection has these motherly notes in it for us in the future. And also it has these motherly notes for our loved ones whom we look forward to seeing again in the future as well, that Jesus will take them by the hand, raise them up and introduce them to the community around them. That's just beautiful. It's hopeful. It powerfully promises that death doesn't have the last word and that God is tenderly cares for us in this life of the future. And that also that we're not raised to a spirit. We're raised to a new body. And mothers take care of bodies, feed us, clothe us. Anyway, I'm musing there. Tell me if I'm correct off track later on. But I don't want to end there. So first of all, I had a thought about that there's motherly and caring aspects of the women here are highlighted. This new life of disciples has these motherly notes to it. And that resurrection perhaps might be done in this motherly, tender, caring way to us in the future. But so what? What does it mean for us now? I like to go to verse 36b again. It says about Tabitha, she devoted... There's two thoughts about this. The first one is that, verse 36, Tabitha was devoted to good works and charity. As we think about the resurrection, that Jesus is alive now, and that the crucifixion wasn't a terrible mistake, the kingdom has arrived, the king has been installed as king of the cosmos, and is alive, incognito at the moment. Yes, the kingdom is hidden, but the king is alive. This changes the way the life that people are lived. Now, you could say that Dorcas Tabitha, either name, was someone who was devoted to good works before Jesus was raised from the dead. But the fact is, this life of being devoted to other people and good works of charity seems closely aligned as a working definition of a disciple. These motherly notes come out in what it means to be a disciple, caring for people in close proximity to their bodies, clothing them, feeding them. And we also know that Tabitha crossed ethnic and cultural boundaries because she was known as Tabitha. I think that's the Aramaic one. Does anyone know? Is that the Aramaic word? Dorcas was probably the Greek name that she had. It shows that she crossed ethnic and religious boundaries. She was referred to in either names. So that's the first point. This resurrection life involves people living it out in doing good works in this tender, motherly way and crossing boundaries in order to do that. And not just in their own community, they go into these different cultural boundaries. Second, and this is where Randall stole my thunder, we get a last verse here, which seems a bit of a throwaway verse and maybe a connection to what's going to happen next, but it says in verse 42, once Peter has done all this, this became known throughout Joppa, that is, that Tabitha was raised from the dead, and many believed in the Lord. Meanwhile, he, Peter, stayed in Joppa for some time with a certain Simon, a tanner. Now, you might think this is a sort of a segue into the next story, and it is. But it also says a lot here about this story too. Peter, as Randall was mentioning, was a Jew, and he had all these cleanliness laws that he had to live under. It prevented him from eating with unclean people or Gentiles, and a person was often unclean if they dealt with blood and dead bodies and dead animals. And so Peter, from his Jewish understanding, would become unclean for being in touch with someone who dealt with bloody animals. Do you know what a tanner does?
Treats leather.
Treats leather, yes. Treats dead skin, possibly blood. The skinners, just think of where your leather boots came from. The skinners hand over the skins to the tanners and they make the leather. So it's a dirty, unclean, a smelly job. And Peter, who is a Jew, wouldn't usually be allowed to be in contact with such a smelly, unclean person as a tanner. And yet, here he is staying, eating, and being with a tanner, Simon the tanner. So what this says is Jesus' resurrection, these motherly, tender notes that we live into as disciples of the resurrected Jesus, call us to move beyond our comfortable bounds. There's a sense here that we're called into places that are of different cultures, different subcultures, places that we might not agree with. Peter was probably thinking, oh, I don't agree with this, staying with Simon the tanner. And yet the resurrection, Jesus, is king over all this. And so Jesus' disciples are now called to places where they wouldn't usually go, and to deal with people they wouldn't usually deal with, and to have this motherly, tender care for people perhaps they don't want to be with and don't agree with. You can see the resurrection means that our normal bounds that we live within are broken free, and Jesus asks us to go to those places. We're ushered there because things have changed. Jesus is resurrected. And this method is not mass-produced. It's done. We're sent to places to be with people in close proximity. We can touch their bodies. We can be with them. We can smell them. We're in this close proximity to others people because the body is important. Resurrection has been done in Jesus. I'm going to invite a person probably next week to come to speak to this congregation who deals with community meals of the like that we do for People's Pantry. And I'm going to invite him to come to speak with us because he deals with meals, that sort of stuff around Australia. He goes to other parts of the world and he talks about this, how churches are called beyond the walls of the church to these community places and to empower other people who are not like us. And Peter prayed about this. I met that lady who lives in a car on Friday night. And we're called to these places to care for these people tenderly. And he's got a community in Rosebud that he ministers to. Many of the people from the Rosebud community are street adjacent. That is, they live next to the street. They live in campgrounds, on council grounds. And so he tells stories of coming in contact with people who are very different to us, that we might be usually aware of, doing things we don't agree with. There was one story where this lady was smoking 4 bongs a day, and she'd come and tell the community, "Now I smoke 3. And there was a great celebration. Now, you might not agree with all that, but there is a sense of journeying with this person and just moving that dial just a little bit. So we're called to these places with people's problems and issues that are sort of out there. And if we admit it, our problems and issues are probably a bit more domesticated. We don't let them out as much. This is the place we're called to. This is what resurrection means to us, is motherly, tender care to those in other places. So my question is to you is, Peter is called to Simon the Tanner. What sort of Simon the Tanner are you called to? And Tabitha is called across the boundaries of her ethnicity. What sort of boundaries are you called to cross into to show this tender, lovingly care? Resurrection is true, is good, bodies are good, and maybe proclaiming some of that love and hope to others. But certainly showing that love and hope to others. So what is the Simon the Tanner that you're called to? And what boundaries are you called to cross into as well?